Also, why had no one predicted the appearance of the mages and healers in the second and third waves? The questions came pouring out from me like a river. You could say I was gushing with them. Besides, I was extremely serious about receiving answers, so Anastaria had nothing else to do but answer me. What she did, however, was smile languidly, press herself up to me, and say, "Thank you so much for the victory," and merged with me in a passionate kiss. Notifications began to flash past my eyes about using love magic, but I only came to at the dating house, lying on my back with one arm embracing sleeping Stacy. It had turned out to be quite a chat. "Ding! You have received a notification from an NPC. Do you wish to read it?"
"Greetings to the head of the Legends of Barleona clan, who furnished his fighters to defend the honor of my clan. My name is Classius. I am the father of Slate. It took me an entire night to grasp just how great of a favor you did for my son, by allowing him to appear beside his love. It is hard to admit that I will never see him again. From now on, people are prohibited from entering the Craggy Forest, but I am happy to realize that he found his happiness with her whom he loved more than anyone else in this world. Thank you, and thanks to your warriors. Don't think that in this matter I am trying to shirk my responsibility for giving you false information. There were no mages or healers among the werebeasts when my clan was part of the council. Who could have thought that while we were in exile, the werebeasts would complement their forces in this manner? I wish to exculpate myself and begin to loathe your clan, as my leader compels me to, with a clean conscience. Accept from me this item. I believe that it will suffice as payment for the help and happiness you have provided to my non-existent son. From now on, you and your people are the enemies of the werebeasts. Classius, head of the Silver Hand."
Acquired item, playing card, Ace of Diamonds, item class, unique set.
I looked down to find in my hand a flat piece of plastic or cardboard bearing the image of an Ace of Diamonds. A unique set item. Unless I'm mistaken, each of the 52 fighters who came out in support of the werebeasts received a similar prize. It followed that there was some kind of complete set of cards, which should grant us another quest. Good work, developers. You've taken the quest offer and split it into 52 parts and then scattered those around all the players. So, if you want the quest, you'll have to go around and collect them all. And if even one person digs his heels in, you may as well forget about the quest altogether. "Rise and shine, Stacy." "What?" the girl muttered through her sleep. Players weren't penalized for sleeping in Barleona, but the accepted custom was for players to sleep in reality. "Check the mail. You should have a letter from a werebeast. I'd like to know what your reward was."
"You're really actually interested in something?" muttered Anastaria, opening her eyes and reaching for her mailbox. "It's typically the opposite. As a rule, everyone's interested in what you have and how they can get their hands on it."
"Are you one of them?"
"Why not? I've just gone further than the others. I don't need a part of you. I'd rather have a unique item all to myself.
Can't say I've ever been compared to an object before.
Don't get aggro. I have an ace of hearts. By the way, that letter is a template, so you've already seen the answers to your questions. What did you get?
Ace of diamonds.
Okay. There were 52 of us, and you and I received a unique card each. Have you sent out a message to the clan yet?
Not yet. I wanted to make sure first. To all members of the Craggy Forest campaign, our successful completion of the quest has earned each of us a unique playing card. If we gather them all together, we'll have a complete deck, which should unlock a quest. I request everyone to please send their card in to me.
I wouldn't do it,
Anastaria instantly remarked, handing me her Ace of Hearts.
Why send you something that I could sell?
That's why I didn't mention anything about buying them. Whoever asks for money won't be hanging around the clan much longer. I am proposing to unlock a quest for the entire clan, so if anyone decides to earn a buck for himself, I will gladly buy the card and say farewell to such a person.
I agree. The card doesn't actually provide anything other than information that it's somehow important to someone, and not even to just anyone, but the clan specifically. To foolishly attempt to get rich off something like this?
And so we had to let go of 3. 7 new raiders asked for 20 to 100,000 gold for their cards. I spoke to each one and explained that this was not how we did things in this clan. 4 of them saw my point. 3 players insisted on their position, arguing that the playing card was their reward for their personal efforts, not for the clan's work. All of my attempts to explain that without the clan they would never have received the quest were shattered against a wall of incomprehension. And so, goodbye, 250,000 gold and 3 players. What I was most happy about was that Magdi fully supported me about testing players' loyalty to the clan in this manner. He tried to speak to this trio as well, and received the same response as I did, a refusal to hand over the card for free. Oh well, no use crying about it. If the people need 100,000 gold right this instant, it's not in my power to say deny them.
Do you wish to assemble the item Deck of Cards?
Yes.
Item created, Deck of Cards. Description: you may now enjoy a game of solitaire as you recover from your labors. Item class, unique.
And that's it? Anastaria burst out laughing when she saw the outcome.
Tan, there has got to be someone who really doesn't like you in the corporation. Well played.
I have come to announce that the time has come for you to travel to the castle.
Not giving me a chance to think of a witty riposte, a herald appeared beside us.
You shall be brought to the central gates of Narlak, a port city and a provincial capital. You must register in the city as warriors who have come to fight the phantoms in the castle, upon which you shall be granted the right to pass through the security cordon around the castle. If I deliver you straight to the castle, the guards may take you for phantoms and try to destroy you. Please, follow me.
Suddenly I realized the truth of Stacy's remark. Not only had I wasted 250,000 gold on an ordinary deck of cards, and not only was the castle in the middle of nowhere, but we'd have to travel there on our own steam. If I recall the map correctly, the journey would take 2 days on horseback. It's hard to even imagine how we could be worse off. It's worth admitting, though, that I have a very poor imagination. But I only discovered that later.
"Stacy, what are you doing here?"
An astonished exclamation forced me to start. The player's voice was extremely familiar, but I could not remember from where.
"Don, it's good to see you,"
smiled Anastaria as a shadow swooped over me. A player was landing beside us. "Do not panic," was deputy head of the Azure Dragons, Undigit's assistant, and, as Anastaria liked to describe him, while naturally giving herself first place, the second best mind in Malabar.
"Hello, everyone," he said, folding the griffin into a bridle and putting it away in his bag. "I see you're expanding."
Don nodded at the departing raiders.
"A laudable beginning. Plinto, the impenetrable wall. Have you managed to take first place in the player-level rankings?"
"Not yet," smiled the rogue. "Hell and I are on the same level at the moment. It's no big deal, though. There's a nice, juicy castle up ahead. I'll have some fun there."
"So, that nameless castle really is the Urusei that the Emperor promised you? Have you come here because of that miracle, O most noble of the clans? What, have you already managed to scatter the barbarians?"
"Plinto, if you don't mind, let me and Mayan do the talking here."
A message from Stacy immediately appeared in the clan chat.
"I'd rather not gift Don any information."
"You've warned him to bite his tongue?"
Do Not Punic smirked right away.
"Don't stress it. We lay no claim to the castle. We have enough phantoms as it stands. I take it you're already aware that you have level 300s flying around your new real estate. Invisible, mean, tremendously hard-hitting, and on top of it all, they respawn every 24 hours as if they're key NPCs. And please note, this is all information I've provided you entirely gratis. Unlike some."
I smirked to myself, silently cursing the creators of the film who chose to include the Emperor's entire speech about the barbarian quest. "I just don't get one thing. We're here to look over our new possession and figure out why there are so many players hovering around it. But what is a level 314 player like you doing so far from all the main events? By the way, you've grown quite a bit, too. If I'm not mistaken, back in the Dark Forest you were at level 303?
"Why, I'm just wandering around. What else? The air here is so fresh that, like it or not, you simply get acclimated to this place. The capital can only boast of the Imperial Garden as competition to the local outdoors. But okay, it was nice to see all of you, but unfortunately, I have business to attend to. If you need any help, don't hesitate to write."
"Of course. You be well, too,"
Stacy replied, and watched the Death Knight walk off and through the city gates. Flying over large cities was prohibited.
"The Azure Dragons are snooping around Altamita, reckoning that there is some item in it that can help the Emperor,"
Anastaria conjectured as soon as Do Not Panic had entered the city.
"They'll do their best to keep us from getting to the castle. Plinto, there's an assignment for you. We'll go register while you head to Altamita. I need to know what's going on around the castle. Mayan and I will wander around the city for a few days and then take our time heading to the castle. If the Azures decide to bar us from getting to it..."
Anastaria trailed off and then continued to herself.
They're the last thing we needed here.
Please state your reason for visiting the city, said the registration clerk with long, whimsical whiskers in the manner of Dolly's.
Despite his imposing appearance, I couldn't help but frown. I've never seen anyone inquire about a player's purpose for visiting a location in Barleona. Since when had the bureaucracy taken up residence in the virtual world? We weren't even allowed to see the mayor, and had to deal with his aide.
"To take possession of our lawful property," Anastaria instantly replied, and added telepathically, "Dan, this is normal. No one may leave the continent without registering. It's a rule of the game, provided for in the agreement."
"Lawful property?"
The registrar was so surprised that his whiskers began to writhe like worms.
"There are no castles around Darlac that are slated for transfer to free citizens."
"Now there is."
Since Anastaria started the conversation, I was fine with letting her see it through.
"Castle Urasai, which recently crushed Castle Glarnis. Mayan and I will become the rightful owners of the castle as soon as we destroy the monster inhabiting it. Such is the will of the Emperor, and I am prepared to warrant my words by summoning a herald."
"This is a border territory, Countess. Heralds have no power here,"
grumbled the registrar, contorting his face in deep consideration.
"Let's say I believe that you are the new owners. Let's assume that I even allow you to pass through the security cordon. An assumption, nothing more, mind you. May I see the documents that support your claim?"
"The Emperor gave us an order. Is that not enough?" I asked, surprised. I could not believe how the registrar was behaving. He seemed like an ordinary person, with the exception of his whimsical whiskers, yet he was behaving like a regular goblin. How could this be?
"Once again, these are all nothing but mere words, with no evidence provided in their support. On what basis should I issue you a security pass for our guard posts? It is as if we didn't have enough vagrants as it stands. Please, remove yourselves from the premises, or I will be forced to call the city guard."
"Stacy? Stay calm, Dan. The mere fact that the herald brought us to the city gates, and not straight here, speaks volumes about the city's status. I'd somehow missed that. Look, I need time to figure out what's going on here. I suggest we depart peacefully and resolve this issue later."
However, the smirking registrar, Anastaria's consternation, the bad day, and on top of it all, the proposal to let things be while the girl figured them out, finally tipped my keel. How dares this little scoundrel, who hasn't yet reached level 150, behave himself this way? It's unheard of in Barleona.
"How dare you tell an earl what he should do?" I growled, stepping toward the registrar. "How dare you bar me from my castle? How dare you oppose the will of the Emperor and the Dark Lord? Does their authority mean nothing to you? Let's summon one who holds that authority. Don't look away."
Begging your pardon, but according to..."
The whiskers began to protest. but I had already lost my temper.
"Silence, villain! How dare you insult a member of the nobility? Who is in charge in this office? I demand the recognition of my rights." "You are playing with fire, shaman."
The walls of the mayor's residence shook around us. Considering that only the guardian could speak this way, it followed that he was the boss in Narlak. But why? Wasn't this imperial territory?
"I am well within my right. No one may prohibit me from taking possession of my lawful property. Urusei is not in Narlak. The castle belongs to the Empire, and I am prepared to summon the Emperor, as well as the Dark Lord, to confirm my rights."
"This sentient," boomed the voice, as a ball of flame appeared over the registrar, "is at fault and shall be punished. Your security pass granting passage to Urusei will be issued. I confirm your right."
+3 to charisma. Total 75. Waving away the notification, I saw 3 green discs appear on the registrar's desk. These would grant Anastaria, Plinto, and me passage to the castle. The registration clerk collapsed in his opulent armchair while his whiskers fell limp as if all their vigor had fled them. The NPC's eyes became glassy. The guardian had commenced with the punishment.
"Tread carefully, shaman. Not all problems can be solved with bluster,"
advised the walls in the name of the guardian, indicating that our conversation had ended.
"Earl, please pass into my office," said a low, timbered voice. "I'd like to speak with you. Don't forget to take your security passes."
"Mr. Mayor," I said, nodding in greeting to the NPC that had appeared beside us. His strict uniform, proudly held head, and prim posture suggested the mayor had formerly been in the military. The absence of any extra weight and his luxurious sideburns added to the impression of a true cavalry officer. All he lacked was a saber, a horse, spurs, and boots.
"Countess," said the mayor to Anastaria, "I would deem it an honor if you joined our conversation, and I beg of you an enormous favor. Please tell your rogue, who is currently trying to crawl through the second-floor window, that his efforts are in vain. The building is entirely protected by magic."
"Plinto, cut out the Tarzan act. They're on to you."
Stacy, who, to my immense surprise, had stayed quiet this entire time, instantly wrote in the chat. She had offered no reaction, even when I had ad-libbed my dressing down of the registrar. No doubt she'd tell me all about it later. The mayor turned and headed for the massive open doors. Assuming that Narlak made use of the same floor plan for the mayor's residence as elsewhere in Malabar, it was safe to assume that he had entered his office and that we should follow after him.
"Please excuse my registrar," the mayor said wearily, lowering himself on a wooden chair.
Comparing the furnishings in the registrar's and mayor's offices, you could be forgiven for confusing who was in charge. The city's senior official had a very, very simple office. Everything in it was laconic and to the point. There were no unnecessary statuettes, paintings, plush furniture, bells, or whistles. even in his own office, the mayor remained an old soldier.
"Please allow me to introduce myself. I am Frantier, the mayor of this city."
"That's it. I can't stay quiet any longer. Danny, what the hell is going on?"
Anastaria's thought immediately invaded my mind.
"You are aware of why NPCs typically introduce themselves, right?"
"Uh-huh. Either to dispense punishment or to issue a quest. It's not looking like a punishment's coming, so..."
"Well, goddamn!"
"Oh, I didn't know that Anastaria knew how to curse."
"Only in extreme circumstances, when there's a hint of something extremely rare. For crying out loud, I get the impression that as soon as you approach them, all the NPCs instantly start recalling secret quests and trip over themselves to share them with you. And yet, as far as I can see, you have no special characteristics that may cause this. Charisma plus crafting. Formally speaking, these stats are entirely unrelated, but I suspect that the chance of getting a secret quest that's mentioned in the description for charisma is multiplied by crafting. Energy level 30. Stop, you angry shaman! Friend here, perhaps you might be so kind as to attenuate our informational entropy regarding what has taken place here? Because at the moment, it's leaving us positively puzzled."
Anastaria began to milk the mayor.
"Finally put, Countess. Have a seat, please. Our conversation may take some time. As you know, Narlak is practically the only point of communication with Astrum, the neighboring continent, and is so both for Malabar and Cartus. This is precisely why we do fall neither in the jurisdiction of the Emperor nor the Dark Lord. We are ruled by the Narlak City Council. The position of mayor, as sad as it is to admit, is merely one that implements the council's decrees in real life. Although that's not entirely accurate. There is in Narlak one location that belongs entirely to the Empire, the governor's residence. The governor rules the province, and I, as I already mentioned, execute the will of the Council of the Nameless, as the City Council is formally called. It is this council that holds the reins of power in this city."
"The Council of the Nameless?"
Anastaria echoed, simultaneously sending me a thought.
"You know, instead of scouring the library for info about Urisai or Altamita or whatever, we should have done our research about this place."
"It is our custom that those who rule this city lose their names and never announce that they have become our rulers. It is even inscribed in the city laws that if the true name of a city council member becomes known, he shall lose his post. This is precisely why everyone pretends like they don't know who our rulers are, while the actual rulers act like they have no relation with the Nameless, even as they gallivant about in luxurious carriages and throw exquisite balls."
"But what does your registrar have to do with all of this? He was behaving as if..."
"Let's not discuss those who are best left in peace," said Frantier, not allowing me to finish my thought. "Each sentient has his weaknesses, and at times one must simply abide them.
Could you explain why the the council is trying to block our access to the castle?
Glernus, the castle that Urasai landed on, is located within Narlak's jurisdiction, not that of the province. Precisely for this reason, when the council discovered the true nature of the castle, it took over its guardianship.
Its true nature?
I don't know how to even explain this. The castle generates phantoms, many phantoms, and they try to destroy any living thing they come across. However, 200 meters from the castle walls, there is an invisible boundary which causes the phantoms to lose half their hit points when they cross it. Furthermore, they're instantly saddled with all kinds of debuffs and slowing spells, as though something forbids these monsters from straying too far from their castle. It's not even a boundary, but a zone with a width of about 20 meters. As they travel through it, each meter of the zone causes immense damage to the phantoms, as though Iluna herself has placed a guarding curse on them. And yet the zone does not kill them entirely. This is why we have erected a security cordon around the castle. The guard's job is to finish off the all-but-dead foes.
That doesn't answer my question about why we are prohibited from approaching the castle. I redirected the conversation back to the topic at hand. In fact, we would be happy to destroy the phantoms on our way to the castle and thereby allow your soldiers to rest.
My spouse has posed a somewhat general question,
Anastaria interfered.
Allow me to clarify it a little. Is the security cordon inside the zone?
Yes,
nodded the mayor, smiling oddly, and added even more mysteriously,
but finish your thought.
Well, it's all basically clear to me.
Anastaria smiled at me no less mysteriously.
All that remains is to clear up some issues that shouldn't have much of an effect on the overall picture. First, how much has the average level of the guard increased by? Second, what did the Azure Dragons do for the city to ensure that access to the castle was blocked? Third, what's so useful about this zone for free citizens? Let me stress that these are all only rhetorical questions that have no substantial effect on the overall picture of what's going on here. I get the general gist.
To your first question, 10. To your second, that's confidential. To your third, the zone grants a bonus of 45 times to experience gained within it.
I think Stacy exaggerated a bit about getting the general gist here. I personally could understand little from the hints flying so thickly through this room. It was like sitting in on a conspiracy session. If, as the Emperor suggested, the castle has such useful properties that the barbarians ran off from their lands, then how were they destroyed to begin with? Or how is it that 30 scouts went to Urasai and never returned? Or that the peasants who fled the lands around the castle rotted alive? I, for one, don't really follow the logic here at all.
Thank you for the information.
Anastaria got up from her chair.
As I understand it, it would be better if we immediately left Narlak.
I did not say that.
The mayor also got up from his chair, forcing me to do the same.
However, the Azure Dragons stand in very good account with our city, so there is a chance that the guards will look past any minor misunderstandings instigated by members of that esteemed clan. Our dungeon is not very comfortable, and I would not like to see... Well, we understand each other, correct?
Correct.
Anastaria nodded and dragged me out of the office.
Plinto, our plans have changed. We're going to Altamita this instant and all together.
Uh-huh. Only get me out of prison first,
came the rogue's response, enclosed in brackets.
I miscalculated a bit on that window.
Stacy, maybe you'd like to let us in on that mysterious secret that only you seem to understand? I began to badger the girl as soon as we had flown out of the city. Plinto was mounted on his swift-winged phoenix, and Stacy on her swift-winged dragon. Me, that is.
Hang on. I'm looking through the forums. When I know something, I'll tell you everything.
She's a good one to ask, smirked Plinto. This madam is busy cursing herself in her head for not researching our destination earlier. Catch me if you can, yelled the rogue as his phoenix zoomed far ahead.
Oh, sure, catch him if I can, I muttered, nevertheless flapping my wings at a faster pace. Funny guy, Plinto. He's sitting on a bird, and everything looks hilarious to him. I, meanwhile, am sweating bullets, keeping Stacy aloft. From afar, it may seem that this all comes easy to me, like second nature, but considering how I feel...
Land by that tree, said Anastaria when she returned back to the game.
We were just passing a dense forest, and the tree that the girl indicated marked a boundary between the woods and an idyllic valley. Neither hills nor gullies. A perfect green square, latticed with roads, sprinkled with peasant huts, furrowed fields, and an immense black ink blot several kilometers from our glade. Urusai. Even from afar, the castle screamed that there was something amiss about it. Dark clouds of fog swirled around its towers, wholly occluding the castle from the sun's rays. The flickering, pale entities seemed to be the very phantoms themselves. There was a bright, shining halo around the castle, clearly visible even from this distance, as well as intermittent flashes of light, which suggested that the players were already helping out the castle's residents. The castle itself did not at all resemble a ruin. To the opposite, it looked like a stout fortress with tall walls and all kinds of buildings within. There were even some kind of black banners flying from its towers. There were certain downsides, too. There was no moat. The castle was standing crooked, having awkwardly crushed Glarnis beneath itself. In addition to this, the players had no doubt done plenty of damage to its walls. My walls.
So, this is the situation, Stacy began as soon as we had landed. There is an enormous mob of PKers running around here. I will bet that the Azure Dragons hired them to ensure that no one would reach the castle and live to tell about it. I suspect that the PKers themselves have signed a non-disclosure agreement, since there's not a word on the forums about any 45 times experience bonus.
Stop describing the current situation and explain what you were talking about with the mayor.
The mayor is an official. He cannot express his personal views. especially when that would harm the city or its economy. But what's clear is that the Azure Dragons stumbled upon this castle while they were looking for some means of dealing with Garanika's dagger. They quickly realized the benefits of grinding by killing the phantoms, and somehow ended up in cahoots with the nameless rulers of Narlak. I have only one theory here. A dumb old bribe. Barleona has that kind of thing, too. Learning that Phoenix had already discovered the dungeon, Undigget dropped his attempts to break into the castle and committed all his men to your ordinary run-of-the-mill grinding session. Considering that Don is already at level 314, they're doing a good job. What else do I need to explain to you? I guess that we should first... Plinto! Making some sort of unimaginable motion, Anastaria fell onto me like onto a child and pressed me to the ground. Swiping away the notification telling me that I was permitted to retaliate because she had damaged me, even if just a little, I became all ears, since I could see nothing but the girl's frame and cuirass. Stacy's frame blinked 4 times, as if someone was throwing darts at her. Then her hit points dropped by 10%, but immediately went back up, not giving me the chance to help her. That's how I spent the next several moments, pressed to the earth under the girl, who had suddenly become as heavy as if she were made of steel. A real hero, I.
4 down, 2 have fled. Oh, I didn't give chase. Let's get out of here. There's not much of a fight to be had here, and I don't want to lose man. He's paying me my salary.
Are you alive down there? The girl asked, removing herself off me and giving me a chance to breathe. Forgive me, but that was the easiest way to keep you safe and sound.
Why? What could they do to me? I'm past level 100 already. As for you, it wouldn't hurt you to lose some weight. You almost crushed me.
You know, 6 level 230 players who specialize in killing other players profoundly do not care that you are already at level 100. I mean, like, not at all. Their goal is to send you back to respawn. They get paid to do it. I'm sending everyone the group. For some reason, it hadn't occurred to me to do it earlier. We've got the PK marker on us now. We'll have to sit it out somewhere for the next 8 hours. I suggest we head for the ocean. They definitely won't look for us there.
I don't know about you, but I've had it with flying, I grumbled. I only have 5 minutes flight time left anyway.
Either way, we need to get out of here. Everyone knows we're here already. Ah, here's something from Do Not Panic.
Stacy got her mailbox and froze for several seconds as she read the message, after which she burst out laughing.
Begging our pardon, Do Not Panic requests that we stay away from the castle for several weeks, preferably months, and even better, that we leave this place while we have our healths. He is very sorry to inform us that Undigget is compelled to declare war on the Legends of Barleona.
I don't understand why he's sending you the letter, and not me, the head of the clan.
He did send you a letter, but he CC'd me. I have Don set to immediate notification, while you've got him on the standard delay. Once you receive it, you can read it. Then we can laugh about it together, again. The second-ranked clan in Malabar has just declared war on the 30,000th one. It's going to be hot on the forums tonight. Poor Barca will have extra work to do. The players would never miss a chance to have a laugh at the cost of those who flew too high. By the way, Mayan, my advice is that as soon as you get Don's letter, reply right away with an offer to him personally to join our clan.
Say what?
I was stunned by such a proposal. Don openly expressed his regret and that he's speaking on Undigit's behalf. And keep in mind that if he wanted to, he has the authority to declare war on whomever he wants on behalf of his clan. My conclusion is that he's not too happy picking a fight with us, but can't do anything about it. Offer to match his salary with the Azure's, unless it exceeds, say, 5 million, and explain that you won't ever ask him to violate his NDA. Send him a link to the Eye of the Dark Widow, and tell him about some rare scenarios we have. Don's been mentioning switching clans for a while, so why not do it now?
Why 5?
That's how much you paid Plinto, so it's a good reference point.
Anastaria shrugged.
The amount doesn't really matter. You can figure that out yourself. I won't even mention how useful Don could be. You know it perfectly well. Considering that the clan competition is coming up, it's an excellent idea.
You think he'll agree? I expressed my doubts.
It's worth a shot in any case. What are you risking by writing a letter? Nothing at all. But if it all works out, you'll acquire a very intelligent, high-level, and simply good person for your clan. On top of it all, he's a tank. Think about it. All right, let's get on our way. I don't have any desire to respawn today. Clan achievement gained. The Praying Mantises versus the Legends of Barleona clan has completed the Nirianna dungeon. Reward for completion, 100,000 gold, plus 7,500,000 clan points. This dungeon may be raided again in 7 days.
There you have it. Magdi and the boys have already completed the first local dungeon. Good stuff. Although they'd spent almost a day on completing it, I was happy with the results. At the current clan point standings, we would reach the second level after another dungeon, and that second level would grant us plus 10% to gold dropped from mobs. Small change, but small change was always welcome.
Dan, can I look at the cards?
Anastaria asked once we had landed beside a modest cliff.
What an excellent phoenix Plinto has. He carried us both, without even noticing the extra weight.
Anastaria's griffin merely flapped his wings as we zoomed over him, under him, before him.
Plinto showed me everything that his bird was capable of, and I must admit that I still had a lot to work on.
It wasn't even a matter of speed, so much as feeling at ease in the air. For the phoenix, the sky was a native medium, and he could maneuver in it in ways I'd never heard of.
"Look away," I agreed, reaching for the bag. But the girl sitting beside me beat me to it, and, without a hint of shame, reached into my bag for the cards.
No, I simply must do something about her access to my bag. Watching the girl engrossed in studying the playing cards, I did that which I had wanted since the day we met, and which I had not done, despite my access to it, until now. I finally checked Anastaria's equipment. And so... Head, epic, level 295. Neck, legendary, level 299. Shoulders, epic, level 295. Boots. She was chock full of either epic or legendary class items. The weapon in particular threw me off. The legendary Glaivendir, a sword without equal. Its description was so opaque and indecipherable that, unless you quaffed some strong reagents, you'd be utterly unable to understand anything at all. But okay, I get the gist of her equipment. Let's keep going. 83 factions encountered, 7 of which burned with a bright red inscription, Hatred. As for her properties, Stacy had healing, faith, wisdom, and charisma. Not a bad assortment, especially for a player who relies on divine magic. When I checked her main stats, I couldn't help but swear. I need to get up to level 343 ASAP, and do so with all the blessings that the girl had. Even the Emperor himself deigned to strengthen Anastaria by 20%. Stacy, you also have several markers on your map. Will you tell me what they're for? I was wondering when you'd get around to digging through my personals. The girl smiled, returning the cards. Want to play gin rummy? Let's. But you haven't answered me. Plinto, you want in? Stacy asked the rogue, again ignoring my question, or else indicating that she wasn't going to answer it. Yep. Yeah, right.
Deal me in!
Stacy, let me ask you again. What's with the markers on your map? If I understood the rules of telepathy, it was impossible for her not to hear my question.
Are you prepared to bail me out of an imperial prison? Asked Anastaria enigmatically. 10 million gold. That is what the Emperor's penalty for divulging such information. If you're okay with it, no question about it. I'll tell you here and now. If not, learn to understand me better, Dan. Everything I can, I'll tell you myself. Even if there's a penalty and it's immense, I'd still tell you. But 10 million, forgive me, is too much to pay simply to satisfy your curiosity. I can tell you one thing. These are one-time scenarios, like your dragon's dungeon, that are specifically for me. Are you going to deal or not?
Hold on, I need to shuffle first, I said, and split the deck. Maybe we'll play poker instead?
Hold 'em,
Anastaria immediately agreed.
Texas, Plinto echoed. 1 gold, small blinds. Shall we start?
Let's draw to see who gets to deal. Fanning the deck, I drew a jack. Plinto drew an 8, and Anastaria, unsurprisingly, a king.
Ante up, said Plinto, rubbing his hands enthusiastically, and threw a gold piece into the pot.
Actually, it was difficult to call it a pot, since it was simply a virtual space on which our imitators placed marks registering who had bet what and how much. For us, in the absence of a normal table onto which we could toss our chips, this basic system sufficed.
Stacy,
forgive the interruption.
The herald's bell rang just before my first card could touch the ground.
I simply wish to advise you that provisionally free citizens are prohibited from gambling. If you choose to continue, you shall be penalized. Please take that into account.
In that case, I pass, I was forced to say, sadly looking at the dealt cards. Thank you, Harold, for the warning, I added. But the Emperor's messenger had already vanished in his portal. Stacy gathered the cards, handed them back to me, and said,
And so you are forbidden from playing cards. This gives rise to a reasonable question. Why did they give them to you? It simply occurred to me that maybe as soon as we played a game that used all the cards, some secret item property would be unlocked. But now, what are these? Like the Pandora's box or something? Open it, and off to the mine with you. Although, I guess there are some pluses here, too.
Pluses?
Now we know for sure that we're being carefully watched, either by the corporation directly or by the imitators. They didn't even let you touch the dealt cards, for that could already be construed as gambling. And yet the Herald showed up just in time to stop you. Had anyone ever told you that you couldn't gamble?
Yeah, there was this one time, I replied, recalling the episode when I had popped out to reality and a corporation official had explained to me what I could and could not do in the game. I remember it like yesterday. I couldn't spend more than 24 hours a week in the dating house.
Then we can only conclude one thing. Someone really doesn't want you to return to that mine, Mayan. All we have to do is figure out the reason. The chess set, the eye, our projections, or the castle. We need to think.
The eye? More and more frequently, I'm catching Anastaria mention the Eye of the Dark Widow. She just suggested I show it to Do Not Panic, and now considers it a completely suitable reason for why the admins might be watching me. And yet, she herself had said that the eye could not be valuable, a typical scenario for killing some boss. It seems like Stacy is equivocating here, and I don't like it. Should I ask her directly?
The Eye of the Dark Widow. Description. 100,000 years ago, before humans appeared in Barleona, the world was ruled by the cruel and capricious Tarantula Lords, who subdued all other races with their power. After a cataclysm, the Tarantula Lords vanished, and all the races tried to expunge the millennia of suffering under the Tarantula yoke from their memory, letting them be entirely forgotten. But in the depths of the Free Lands, there still exists a cult worshipping these lords, and its patriarch dreams of bringing back the tarantulas and submerging the world in fear and pain. Stop them, or it will be too late. Go to the Emperor for further instructions. Quest type, legendary. Level requirements, at least 100. Group requirements, at least 20 members. Reward, hidden.
Gosh, so much text. A legendary quest issued by the Emperor. Stop. 100,000 years ago? But then what about the dragons? Weren't they the scourge of Malabar back in those days?
You still with us, Dan?
Anastaria asked telepathically, perhaps worried that I had crashed. Tell me, Stacy, why is the eye so important?
I already told you.
Stacy, tell me the truth, please.
My dad will kill me.
Stacy.
Let's wait until Plinto logs out to reality. It's a long conversation, and I don't have enough energy.
A few words, at least.
It creates another key to the tomb. Carmandant created the chess set, so it's not like he could have reached the tomb with it. An item similar to this one led him to it.
And are there many such items scattered around, Barleona?
I said aloud, retrieving the eye. I attempted 3 dungeons, but we never once completed even half of one. By casting hiding and acceleration, Plinto managed to get further than anyone else the time that the raid of the Dark Legion was destroyed. That was when he acquired his phoenix. It was the Emperor's reward for his efforts. An eye, fang, claw, or some other tarantula body part unlocks an attempt on a dungeon, so the cost of any error is very great. At the moment, you can't activate this quest. Magdi's boys need a chance to level up a bit and get used to fighting with each other. In the dungeon, the monsters are always 3 levels higher than the level of the group's strongest player, so neither I nor Plinto can help, everyone else will be simply devoured.
In other words, all these items are related to the tarantulas, correct?
Yes. Is something bothering you?
The story in the description about how 100 millennia ago the tarantulas ruled all just doesn't make sense to me. As I've learned, back then it was the dragons who were the scourge of Barleona.
I suggest you ask the Patriarch. He should know the truth for sure. The question is merely whether he'll be willing to tell it to you. Plinto, do you have any way of contacting your father?
Nope. The rogue stretched himself on the ground. He said that he'd be busy for 2 months preparing our new training, so at the moment no one can see him. When the second round gets underway, we'll be able to ask. That information is definitely of no use to us for the next month or two. I'm going to leave you two to your sweet talk and pop out into reality. 8 hours is too long for doing nothing.
Stacy, I want to hear the full story. What is up with the eye?
What does it do?
I asked once Plinto had vanished.
All right. Look, the idea of getting into the tomb of the Creator has been bouncing around Barleona for about 9 years now. In effect, it's one of those long-term projects that no one is willing to commit to all the way. At the moment, the Celestial Empire has gotten the closest. All they have to do is create one more item, and they'll be able to open the door. You're second after them. Already having 3 completed items, you only need 3 more to open the tomb's doors. And yet, don't forget that it still has to be located, and you still haven't solved the ogre's riddle. 3rd place is occupied by 2 players at once. 1 is from Astrum, and the other remains unknown, although what is known is that he must be from Kaltua. Each has created 2 of the legendary items in the chain, which leads to the opening of the Creator's Gates, so we can speak of them as contenders. Each one of you has 18 months remaining in the quest. As far as I know it, you are the 3rd on our continent.
I get it. There are better crafters than me. But you still haven't explained what the eye is.
In 4 years, not one crafter has even gotten close to creating the whole thing. Initially, the time period was 1/2 year, then 1 year. Now it's 18 months. But nonetheless, the players just can't manage to fulfill the developer's assignment. So they came up with the whole tarantula idea. I don't know how they shim them into the game lore, nor what they have to do with the dragons, but I personally have had discs, a fang, and an ear of the Dark Widow, all with descriptions similar to yours. My uncle has several more in his clan. They get first kills, too, after all. The point of these items is simple. He who completes a dungeon on his first attempt receives a key to the tomb of Barleona's creator. I already mentioned the result. Phoenix never reached further than the Greylands. Plinto managed to get back out, but the 3rd boss was too much for him. As a result, we know for certain that there are at least 4 bosses in the dungeon, and they are several levels stronger than the strongest player in the raid party. But I already told you this.
And yet, when you first saw the eye, you said there was nothing important about it, I smirked.
You're a strange one. What else was I supposed to tell you? Back then, you were a nobody to me. I didn't even know your name. Now, yes, my father strictly forbade me from relating to you the information about the eye, hoping to buy it from you at some favorable moment, but I don't want to introduce deceit into our relationship. If I don't wish to tell you something, I'll say, "My dear, forgive me. That's not my secret to share." At the moment, there's no secret about it. There's plenty of info about the tarantulas available from public sources.
"Can you get it for me?" I asked immediately. "I very much want to figure out the history of my race."
"Okay, I have a very detailed account. I'll let you read it. Now, have I satisfied your curiosity, my dear?"
"Almost," I grinned. "Tell me, are you familiar with the contents of this scroll?" I took out the recording of the Commandant chess set and offered it to the girl. "I'd very much like to hear your opinion on the matter." The final obstacle to my complete trusting of Anastaria floated up from the depths and into our joint awareness, having on hand the ultimate piece of proof that perhaps the girl had entered my clan solely due to the quest and not due to... due to our two clans, the worm of suspicion refused to allow me to believe her. He's a strange critter in general. He mistrusts everyone, including myself.
"What an interesting little document."
Quickly scanning the text, Anastaria pensively returned it to me.
"There's a third part there, too, no? For the creator."
"There is." I didn't try to deny the obvious.
"How fun. I imagine that you're thinking about my joining our clan. As the Emperor is my witness, I never saw this document or the text written in it,"
the girl said suddenly, and was immediately surrounded by a white light. The Emperor confirmed her words.
"That would be more effective than trying to prove to you that I'm not really a giraffe. My father never showed me this paper. What a conspirator. Oh, well, I'll have a chat with him eventually. He'll see what happens when you hide something from me. Forgive me, Dan, I'm being emotional, but he and I trusted each other that we were open with one another about everything, and here..."
The worm of suspicion scoffed contemptuously, called Stacy some unprintable words, and wriggled away back to sleep in his hole. While I, for the first time in many years, both in reality and virtual reality, embraced the girl I loved and experienced only one feeling: immeasurable happiness. Chapter 8. Meeting Altamita.
"The castle's straight ahead!"
Plinto exclaimed joyfully, as if he could hardly wait to plunge into the thick of battle. We had only about a kilometer left to fly, but it was already seriously gloomy. The castle was surrounded by an earnest and roiling battle. And what's more, was that the battle was roiling not in the circle of light, but right at the gates. Judging by the quivering white torrent flowing in a long tongue from the castle, Altamita had phantoms aplenty.
"Let's land by the circle of light,"
Anastaria reminded just in case.
"Oh, we're already drawing fire!"
yelled the rogue, and sharply banked his phoenix to let an arrow pass. NPCs would never open fire without first determining a reason for it, which meant that we were being attacked by players. Either the Azure Dragon's mercenaries, or they themselves. It didn't matter. The main thing was we were at war and being shot at. Per Stacy's advice, I had written to Do Not Punic the night before, inviting him to join our clan. But he instantly replied with a refusal. The Death Knight was not for hire, even if I paid for the entire value of his contract with his current clan. He warned me one more time not to approach the castle, adding that otherwise his people would begin to hunt us until the heralds would have to get involved. But, okay, that was his decision to make, and he made it. I won't offer a second time.
Change of plan. Fly right for the circle. There's some NPCs fighting over there right now. We can help them. Our main goal is to show our passes.
Let's go, Plinto agreed, banking his bird again, and, at this point, we entered the circle of light.
You have entered blessed ground. Buff received, Illuna's gift. All characteristics increased by 45%. Experience gained increased times 45. Growth to stats increased times 45. Duration of buff, 2 hours.
Yeah, droned Plinto. I'd kill anyone for this, too.
Bring us down, came Stacy's shout, as Plinto's phoenix transformed back into a bridle beneath me.
We began falling in a parabola, carried by our inertia. Hitting the ground from 100 meters up, that's how high we'd been flying, is all but a guaranteed respawn. Yeah, right. As practice now revealed, flying over the castle was forbidden. If you want to enter the enormous, secure territory, you'll have to break down the gates as per the game rules. I guess the developers wanted to ensure that the players got a full taste of all the lovely diversions they had prepared for them. But we weren't the kind to use standard approaches.
Plinto, grab on!
I yelled, transforming into a dragon. 100 meters